Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Coming up on episode 318 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the new Honda Accord Hybrid, the Volvo S60 Recharge, Carvaloo detects crashes and other incidents, another ride in an Austin, Texas cruise robo-taxi, Porsche's 911 GT3R Rennsport, the new Honda Prologue, and Tacotober. All that and more coming up next. This is episode 318 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abual-Salmon from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakeland from The Road Reflected.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from SAE International and this year, Tacotober's, well, I'm always the Tacotober MC. I don't know.
tell us more about Tacotober,
Robbie. What is Tacotober? Robbie?
I feel like I really let you, at least Nicole down, it seems like. Every year, Tacotober, I've been doing Tacotober for probably like 10, 15 years at this point, but you eat 31 tacos in 31 days. That's the deal. It's just a fun thing you do during October, Tacotober.
I can do 31 tacos in 31 days.
Bam, there you go. So that's Tacotober. You do 31 tacos in 31 days. It's a fun thing that me and a bunch of friends came up with a very, very long time ago.
Do they have to be unique tacos every day?
No. They can be just regular old tacos. And you can have, if you want, you can like finish Tacotober today. You can just go and eat 31 tacos. that's your jam. Yeah. At one point, it was like there had to be a taco for every meal. And then we pulled that back because it got too crazy when you taco for every meal. So one taco a day is a nice little thing. There's some rules that are out there. I guess you can look up Roberto Baldwin Tacotober.
And it raises money for Feeding America.
So Feeding America. So yeah. During lockdown, I thought, you know, let's do Tacotober. And I thought, oh, it'd be fun if people, because I had nothing else going on, if folks, if they donated more than $50 or more, I would write a little song about them. And so I just stuck my phone and I got my little, I have a drum machine and I have a bass and I have a bunch of like music gear in my home. And so I wrote little goofy songs every time someone would donate. And then the following year, when lockdown was sort of up, I recruited the other person in my band, Drastic Cats. And so now the new rule is if $50 or more, again, we will write a song about you. But the rule is for us is that we show up a few weekends during October, November, December to write these songs, and we haven't pre-written the song. Like we'll have an idea, we'll have like I know what this person's about. Let's write about this. But typically, we'll write and record the song in an hour, which means we're writing and recording a song with like one take, maybe two takes. And we've put out two albums with it. So last year and the year before. So if you look up Drastic Cats on Bandcamp, you can listen to the album. Not all of them are great songs. Some of them are like little gems. Some of them are like, oh, these are actually pretty good songs.
I like qualifier. The quality of the song is not guaranteed.
Yeah.
Like you get a song.
Might be good.
Maybe
you
not.
Get a song. Like, I'm doing drum tracks. Like, I think this is a good drum, and I'll be playing it. And like, there's like ghost notes, but you can hear I'm not hitting the snare hard enough for them because I didn't practice the song because I came up with the song right then and there.
That's awesome.
So yeah, so it's and of all the things that have come with music, like recording is the one thing I actually don't like doing. I like writing songs, I like playing songs, I like performing songs, but recording, I'm just like, oh my God, because I start getting in my head about like messing up the songs.
Too much pressure.
Too much pressure. So you can like, and I do all the drumming, so you can hear that in the drumming. Like sometimes you're like, oh, he's just missed something. So anyway, if you feel like Tacotober, it's great. And then if you like, you can give a donation to Feeding America. I grew up really poor. I remember having holidays where we just didn't have food. I remember still my friend today, when she met me in fifth grade, she asked me, why are you so skinny?
Oh, God.
First thing she asked me. So I do remember a local charity one year had brought us a care package of food, and it really made like the holidays so much nicer. So Feeding America, I like to give money to Feeding America as much as possible. Cool. So every year for Tacotober for the last 3 years, that's where the money goes, to Feeding America. So you make a donation and you can email me. There's instructions on the Feeding America rules, or not rules, but sort of page that I've created that will be in the show notes, and you can do that. And anyway, Tacotober, go eat tacos.
That's awesome.
Donate if you can. If you can't, that's fine. I understand. Yeah, there you go. That's all.
Very cool. You're doing a good thing. Go, Robbie.
Yay! Finally.
Yeah, took long enough.
Oh, all right. But this is a show about cars and stuff.
It is, technically speaking.
Technically. You can eat tacos in cars.
That is true. You can eat tacos in cars. And they're actually a pretty good driving food.
They are.
You don't have to put like lettuce and taco sauce.
I think a burrito is probably better. A burrito is probably a better driving thing. Cause you can.
What you don't want is like a taco or a burrito with like really greasy chorizo. I love eating those, but it's not a good choice for in the car. That's something you go in the car to your local taco truck, pick up a chorizo burrito, as I sometimes do for lunch, because there's one nearby here, and bring it home, and then sit outside on the deck at the table, and have a nice,
put a sheet down.
Yeah, exactly.
Put a sheet down. Put on a bib.
As a big fan of chorizo, I love chorizo. I love chorizo burritos. I love chorizo tacos. It is an oily mess. Do not eat those in the car.
Yeah. All right. But
what are we talking about? Cars.
Yeah. What did you drive, Nicole?
I drove the Volvo S60 Recharge.
Ooh.
I don't, you know what? It's always funny. I love this car. Actually, I had a really fun time driving it, but it makes me nuts when like you have to, like, you can't just say plug-in hybrid. You have to call it the Recharge. Like, you give it a slightly different name than the rest than the other one.
You can call it a plug-in hybrid. That's what it is. Call it what it is.
Technically, they call it though the Volvo S60 Recharge, because Recharge is what all their plugins are.
Okay.
Because they're fancy pants. And I did have the fancy pantsest version of this. I had the Ultimate, which I think is the fanciest one. Yeah. And it starts at just under $59,000. It's like $58,495. So it is, you know, firmly in luxury car territory. And it looks like it when you open it up. I mean, it has like a Harman Kardon premium audio system that has the most gorgeous speaker grills. Like, they're these really ornate speaker grills. So it makes it look pretty. They've got, you know, leather seating trims on the seating surfaces. They have, I don't know technically how adjustable the seats are. I feel like infinitely adjustable. I accidentally was sitting there and I was sitting with the door open, and I had my foot sitting on the door sill, and my boot touched the little rest, and I'm like, what is happening? The seat's moving. It took me forever to get it back in the right position. I'm like, which of these buttons did I hit and accidentally misadjust?
70
thigh
buttons.
Support, back support, lumbar support. What have I done? But yeah, it even has the thigh support thing that, like, the entire front part of the seat cushion under your legs moves forward, and then it moves back. Although, pro tip, if you move it back, it will squinch your little leg if you're not careful. Like, it'll pinch your leg. It's like squinch. And it's, so I'm not a fan of that, but I don't use them. I normally just make them short anyway. I bet, like, you, Robbie, do you use those in like every car that has them? Do you make the thigh support thing extend out?
I'm so used to not having the thigh support.
Yeah.
because of most cars that I'll do it, and then sometimes I'll forget I've done it. But for the most part, I just sort of ignore it.
See, and I feel like
because you're so used to like not having that extra thigh support as a tall person with long legs,
and I
so,
feel like it's
when
like,
it's there,
there
you sort of forget.
You. Like you were the guy. You were the reason it exists. Are the Robbies of the world? You didn't even use it. Yeah. So I never use it because anytime I get in a car, the guy who generally drops off my car is taller than I am. And I noticed it right away because he puts it all the way out. And I'm like, why does this seat cushion feel so weirdly stabbed into the back of my knees? I'm like, oh, wait a second. And I pull it back. That's why I notice it. Otherwise, I would never use it. So it's beautiful. And it has, okay, the gear shift, it looks like glass or plastic. No, it's Orifor's crystal gear shift thing there, which looks absolutely beautiful. It makes me think, like, how much is that? Like, I can't find anything saying how much. Like, say you get, I don't know, you're not paying attention, you're eating your chorizo taco, you fumble it, something happens, you bonk the gear shift, you've now cracked your crystal gear shift. Does that cost, is that like 80% of the cost of the vehicle is in that gear shift?
Probably.
I doubt it.
It's, but no. Those, they can't.
Probably, it's probably no more than 25%.
If, oh, 25. Okay, much more.
It's hard to imagine it would be worth more than the battery.
Because it feels like one of those things, if you accidentally scratch it or break it, it's like, oh no, that's how that is now. Because it's going to be too expensive to fix. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's a really cheap component. I fail to believe
what,
this.
What you do, I think what you do in that scenario is, you know, you go to a pick and pull yard, find a scrapped Volvo.
Yes.
And it doesn't even have to be the plug-in hybrid. Just get one of the standard ones that has a non-crystal shifter.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure it'll fit right on there.
And just replace it with a board, but then you've lost the crystal shifter.
That is true.
Your car is just meh.
Before who cares? It was, ooh, who wants it at that point?
Now it's just meh. Yeah, like why even bother? Just junk it once the gear shifts.
I don't even want to be in that car.
Right? Like forget it. I don't want to drive this one.
You find somebody on Etsy, you know, that works in glass and crystal.
You could make one
for
you.
Have a custom made one.
Oh,
ooh, that might be even cooler than the. Or yeah, make it. It could make one custom and have them like engrave like WB for wheel bearings in it on the logo. Yeah. That could be the wheel bearings perfect. Customs gear shifts. That would be amazing. That would be funny. That's what I need to do. I need to find an Etsy person to do that. So anyway, so fancy pants gear shift. And the way the gear shift works, no two OEMs seems to do this the same anymore. In the ever evolving, we can make it better, faster, stronger. And everyone just kind of going, can you leave it alone? Like what worked, worked. We don't need to reinvent the wheel, but yet they do. So this one, so the little, the gear shift, that's the, and you have to push it like there's, you're pulling it, pushing it to get to like drive in reverse, but park is a little button right next to it. So you got to push the button to go and park, and start is a little dial. Like you think it makes it think like a dial that would be like, and it's right in front of the gear shift behind it, in front of it. And you twist it and it like, it springs back, click, click, like springs. And that's how you turn on the car. So you got the little turn on thing. You got your fancy gear shift. When you put it in park, you got to put the button and you got to click the little dial again. I feel like it's overdone. Have you guys driven this? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I have.
I find it a little overdone.
Yes, I agree. I think between, I don't know if it's designers or engineers, but everybody these days seems to feel like they need to reinvent the transmission gear selector.
Yes, they don't.
We need you got to do a special sign. You have to hit three different buttons.
I would say it's kind of Jaguar's fault. Because XF back in 2007 or 8 when the XF came out, that was the first one they did a rotary shifter, and it would, when the car was off, it would sink down, it would be flush with the center console. So when you started the engine, it would rise up, you know, and then you'd twist it to shift. And ever since then, you know, everybody's been trying to come up with different ways to do the shifting, and. Right. Yeah, most of them just are not that effective.
I just don't need to be fancy. I feel like they need to come up with one. Like, we're just getting to the NACS universal charger thing. Let's come up with one version of a gear shift. Just one.
That's one of the reasons I like getting in the Mercedes, because I always know it's just going to be the stock.
Yeah.
It's like, go, stop.
But then I'm always on the highway, and at some point I go to change lanes, and I flip the car into neutral at 60 miles an hour. Every time, without fail, I hit that and think it's a turn signal. Like, oh, crud. Yeah, put it back in drive. So that was like my only real, like the thing that I didn't like. I just found a little wonkity every time I got in the car. But in terms of driving, I mean, it's absolutely beautiful to drive. It's super powerful. It has a 2-liter turbo 4 in it. It's got 455 horsepower. 523 pound feet of torque. Those are nice, hefty numbers, and they make it move. Like if you mash the gas when you get on the highway, the thing has no problem whatsoever. And it has that sort of luxury car, very Volvo smooth kind of thing. It's quiet. It's not angry about how it does anything. It's like, yes, I will aggressively accelerate you onto the highway in the most mild mannered way that I possibly can. It won't be, I won't disturb you. I won't ruffle your feathers. The people in the back seat might not even know that's what's happening, but you feel free to mash that gas and go ahead, you know, front of the crowd. And I'll just do this very nicely for you, which I kind of like. It's like stealth in how it delivers its power. You don't know that it's a powerful little car. Then zoom, it goes right by. So I really enjoy driving it. I thought it was really fun. It has 41 miles, they say, of all electric range, which is actually pretty good. I mean, you figure that they're, I think, what the lowest range like plugins are somewhere in the mid low 20s, and then they go up to around this.
Yeah, around low 20s.
So I feel like 41 miles is not bad. So I could pretty much get around the whole day and not really need to use the gas engine at all, which is always fun. It's always neat when you drive a plug-in hybrid to see how far you can get before it like zoom, it, you know, flips over on you. But it was very fun to drive. It is such a nice car, and it has that, it has a very luxurious interior. Again, this is the top trim, that ultimate, and it's not cheap because like I said, it's only under 60 grand, but it feels like this very modest, it has this very Volvo way of delivering luxury. There's nothing in your face. There's nothing outrageous. You know, even the crystal gear shift that I love, it's not something that's flashy. It's just one of those that kind of catches your eye at one point. You're like, oh, that's pretty. Like nothing is over the top. It's very mild mannered. I really enjoy driving this. And it's even got a nice comfy back seat. My daughter rode in the back seat. And you know what's kind of neat? Over the hump, the dreaded hump in the middle of the back seat, There's, you know, it's generally fabric. It has a little plastic piece over it. It's almost like a floor. Like, you know what's underneath your heel in a lot of cars? Even if you don't have the floor mat, there's that little piece of plastic underneath your heel where the gas pedal is, so you don't make a mark. It has one of those there. So if you put your foot on there, you're not wearing out that little spot. Because if you sit in the back, you kind of spread out. You might have your foot leaning against that. I thought that was kind of neat that there's a little piece of plastic there. And there are also in this one heated rear seats, which I think is amazing. Heated rear seats are the best thing ever. So it's not like you're up front, you're all comfy. Your passengers in the back are freezing to death. It's like, you guys turn on your own heated seats.
Did you have the wool upholstery or the leather?
I want to say mine was a combo. I was trying to figure out my Monroney was messed up. It was like one of those eye tests. If you stare at it long enough, can you read what it says? No, you couldn't.
So or it turns into something like a bird.
Yeah,
or
like are these going to turn into actual words? Nope, they're just going to be blurred. Like literally the copy was blurred. It had leather trim like on the bolsters and stuff. There was fabric in the middle. Maybe it was wool. I'm thinking it could have been, but I didn't have the actual Monroney. But it wasn't like 100% leather seats fully.
Okay.
So, and it looked good. I thought it looked really nice. And I had the, what is it called? The black edition. So like the grill is black, everything's blacked out. It gets to be this very like, it's like a sexy Volvo. Like forget the boxy, but nice. It's a sexy Volvo.
Nice.
So I liked it.
So how much was it?
It was, well, again, my blurry eyed thing there. It starts at $58,495. So that's the starting price. So probably with the little bits and pieces that I had, it was probably somewhere at least in the mid 60s. But again, I can't see everything because the Monroney of mystery. So I'm going to say it's probably, Monroney mystery. Of mystery. Yes. But you, I mean, the base, like you can get into the core. There's core plus and ultimate. Core starts at 53, plus is 55.9, and ultimate is 58.5. So you can get behind the base version of this for $53,000 where you're still getting like the performance and stuff. You're just not getting quite as fancy of an interior. But, you know, it's a Volvo. Even in the base model of this, it's not like you're getting, you know,
a bargain commuter car. It's not like driving a
Yugo. Yes, it's not like driving a Yugo. You can get the most stripped down version of this you get, and it's still a beautiful car inside.
Excellent.
Yes.
And you didn't have anything new this week, right, Robbie?
I drove a minivan on vacation, which I've driven before, the Chrysler Voyager, which is the low-end version of the Pacifica that they just give to rental agencies. So that's what I drove. It's fine. I drove 900 miles. It's fine. It's a good little minivan.
And it's good for dogs, right?
It's good for dogs. Although you're not supposed to have dogs in it, according to the Enterprise. So I didn't. So officially.
In theory, if you had such a vehicle and you had dogs.
If you had a minivan.
The dogs would be comfortable in such a vehicle.
Oh, yeah. They would be comfortable. Let's say, in theory, you just had a big dog bed in the back for them, to rest on while you're driving down the freeway. It would work out.
Okay. That's good to hear. Because, you know, you always want to, you know, if you got dogs, you want to have something that's comfortable for the dogs.
Yeah, you want to, yeah, that's all we care about. Because we could have taken the Kona, but it's like 5 hours drive.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't have been comfortable. That's literally the reason. What about the dogs? Oh, yeah, that's true.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
All right. I had the 2024 Honda Accord Touring Hybrid,
which is
the latest and greatest generation of the Accord, which, you know, is Honda's bigger sedan. It's a big sedan. I think it's actually classified by EPA as full size. And it's a good size car. It's very roomy. This latest edition, like the Civic that came out last year, is a little bit more tame in its design, a little bit more restrained in the design language compared to the previous generation. Not that the previous generation was particularly outlandish, but this one kind of tones it down a little bit. It's a little more refined. It's still, like the last generation, it's still a fastback sedan, so it's very sleek looking. The one I had, the Touring, is the highest trim level in the Accord lineup, and the Hybrid is far and away the most fuel efficient variant of it. It's a 204 horsepower hybrid drivetrain that has. More than adequate performance for most people's needs. It's not going to win any drag races, but it'll get you up to speed reasonably enough when you're merging onto the highway. It's very, very roomy inside. The interior, very similar to the latest Civic. So you've got this strip that spans across the dashboard with like sort of a honeycomb mesh design, and the vents are hidden behind there. So you get the upper portion of the dashboard and the lower portion, and then this divider strip in between that lets the airflow through, and you can control the airflow with your little joysticks in there. And it's really nice. The new Accord was the first Honda to get their new generation infotainment system, which is based on Android Automotive, and this is what's coming to all the other Hondas and Acuras going forward. So it's got Google Automotive Services in there. That means Google Maps for navigation, Google Assistant, Google Play Store, so you can download more apps directly to your device and If you are a Google user, you can just, when you get in, you can log in with your Google account or your favorite Google account, in my case, since I have many. It'll have all of your favorites, all the stuff you've saved in Google Maps, you know, your access to your contacts and things like that. If there's apps that you've bought, like for example, I use Pocket Casts for listening to podcasts. I can go in there and download my Pocket Casts and log into Pocket Casts, and all the stuff I'm subscribed to on my phone or, you know, anywhere else, it all shows up in there, and it syncs that, you know, to the cloud. So, you know, when I get out of the car, it syncs, you know, wherever position I was at in whatever show I was listening to. And then when I pick it up on my phone, it'll be right there at that same location. So, you know, all that stuff's great. If you are an iPhone user and prefer to use CarPlay, you are welcome to do that as well. It supports wireless CarPlay and Android Auto for that matter. Although, again, if you're using Android Auto, don't really need to. Just, you know, do it right in the car. That way you never have to worry about your phone losing connection to the system. But for iPhone users, you can have that and get that stuff up on the screen for you. So something you won't have in GM's EVs going forward, but you can still have it in a Honda Accord. So this is a very fuel-efficient car. It's interesting that I had this right after having the Toyota Crown. You know, the Crown is kind of similarly sized, but the Accord feels a little bit roomier on the inside than the Crown does. You know, this one is also a hybrid. It's a little slightly less power than the standard hybrid powertrain in the Crown. 204 horsepower versus I think about 225, 224 in the Crown. But you know, this one is, the Accord is lighter. It is front wheel drive only, no all wheel drive, unlike the in the Crown. With the 20 inch wheels, or 20, yeah, I think they're 20 inch wheels on the Touring, and they're also on the Hybrid Sport. It is rated by the EPA at 44 miles per gallon combined, 46 city, 41 highway. I did a fair bit of highway driving. I averaged about 42 miles per gallon with the Accord, which is about the same, you know, roughly the same as what I got with the Crown. This one, personally, I think if I was going to be choosing between the two, I would probably go for the Accord, unless I really, really needed all-wheel drive. I kind of like the look of the Accord a little better, even though, as I said, it's a little more subdued than the last generation. It still works really well. It's got, like I said, lots of room, lots of trunk room, lots of passenger room. Drives like you expect a Honda to, which is really good. And you know, with this kind of fuel efficiency, you know, you're not going to be worried too much if gas prices are going up, because this thing's going to go forever on a tank of gas. So that's the Accord Hybrid Touring. And let's see, they did not send me a Mandroni, but let me find the page here where I pulled it up and did a build. So the total MSRP, including destination and handling fees, came to $39,285. Any guesses on the destination charge?
$1,196.
Oh, no winners today. You both went over. It's $1,095. Yeah.
Wow, we were underestimating how affordable this vehicle was.
Crazy kids.
the Accord, the standard Accord, the base Accord LX starts at $28,000 this year. The Sport Hybrid starts at $32,000. So $39,000 is a little too much for you. You can get one starting at $32,000. So that's a little more reasonable, but still, you know, really, you know, Great car to drive. You know, if you want a larger sedan that's going to be comfortable for, you know, three people in the back seat, you know, and you don't feel like you need to look like you're going off-road, even if you never will. You know, the Accord's a great way to go.
I like the Accord. I did a road trip in the Accord out to Accord, New York a while back, or how they call it, Accord. Yeah. So I spent a good time, and it was like road trip. You know, it was hours behind the wheel, and it was a really nice car to drive. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Fantastic. All right, what else we got this week? Oh, let's stick with Honda.
Honda.
So last week, Honda had a briefing, a background briefing here in Detroit. I'm assuming they probably did one in LA too, and other locations, but they did one here in Detroit, where for the first time they showed us in person the new Honda Prologue. So this is Honda's first high volume EV, and it's one of, along with the Acura ZDX that we've talked about previously, it's one of the two EV crossovers that GM is building for Honda on their Ultium platform. Like the ZDX, this one's coming out in early 2024, or at least that's the plan. We'll see. You know, since it's being built in a GM plant, we don't know if those factories will actually be operating.
Let's just say there's a reason. This is the first and last, GM built Honda EV.
It's probably one of multiple reasons why that's the case.
Yeah, let's just say there's some reasons.
Yeah, it's interesting that this one, where the Acura ZDX is very much, basically an Acura body on top of a Cadillac Lyriq, it for all intents and purposes, all the exact same specifications as the Lyriq, same wheelbase, same combinations of rear wheel drive or all wheel drive, same power, same range and everything. The Prologue, which, I think I was kind of expecting would, perhaps be more along the lines of maybe the Blazer or even Equinox in terms of its size and performance and everything, is actually kind of a hybrid in, combination of some of the features of these different vehicles. Because it's got the same 121-inch wheelbase as the ZDX and Lyriq, and presumably the Blazer, even though Chevrolet has still not actually published full specs for the Blazer. So we don't actually know what the wheelbase of the Blazer is, but 121-inch wheelbase. Overall length at about a little over 192 inches falls about midway between a CRV and a Passport. It's about 6 inches shorter overall than the ZDX, so a little less overhang. But it's front wheel drive only. It's not rear wheel drive or all wheel drive. It's only in front wheel drive. And the battery is an 85 kilowatt hour battery, which, doing a little math, works out that the ZDX and the Lyriq have a 12 module Ultium battery pack. And they're 102 kilowatt hours. So the 85 kilowatt hours works out to that this is probably almost certainly got 10 modules. So the same battery pack, but only 10 modules instead of 12. So it's going to be a little cheaper, a little bit lighter. And Honda is saying that it will get at least 300 miles of range in the base version, which has smaller 18-inch wheels or 19-inch wheels. And then they're not saying what the range is going to be for the Ultimate forget what the trim levels.
Touring. There's the two-wheel drive DX and the two-wheel drive Touring. Then
the Elite. Elite is the one I was thinking of.
No, the all-wheel drive Elite.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right. They do have the all-wheel drive. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay. Just in the one trim.
Yeah, they have all-wheel drive is available in the Touring, and it's standard in the Elite, and then front-wheel drive is standard on the EX and the Touring or Sport. Yeah, Touring.
Yeah. No Sport.
Right.
No Sport. According to this Honda website. So who knows what's going to happen between now and 3 months from now.
Right.
Yeah.
That'll tell you one thing. Then when it actually comes to fruition, it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah. The styling is pretty tame. It's not bad. There's nothing wrong with that.
I think it looks fine. It's not especially striking.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I like is it's got a much shorter overhang than the new CRV. So, you know, I think the proportions are better than the CRV. But you know, what do you think of this thing?
I think it looks good. I like the design of it. I mean, it's not especially, you know, striking, but I think it looks good. It falls in, you know, Hondas aren't the world's most eye-catching out there vehicles to begin with. You know, they don't tend to demand your attention. Except maybe if you're like a Civic Type R or something, then it demands all the attention. But like something like this, it fits in with a Honda vibe, I think. It still looks good. Like, I like the wheels. I don't know if the wheels that are on the original or the actual will look anything like what was on this one that there are pictures of here, but I think it
looks good. These are the wheels that'll be on the Elite.
They look really cool. They're kind of fun. I like how automakers are going towards some kind of fun wheels lately. You notice that? They're having a little fun with it. So I think this is kind of neat. I think that's probably the most striking visual aspect. And if it has, you know, if it has the range that is being guessed, it should be a pretty decent range.
Yeah. And it should definitely be able to get the 300 miles with the front wheel drive and the 19-inch wheels. With the 21s and the all wheel drive, it'll probably be somewhere around 260 or so, 265. One thing I like, one of the photos that they have on the Honda media site, shows the cargo area, and it's got the Moto Compacto.
Yes, I saw that in there. Yes.
I was hoping that was there with you and you got to see it and pick it up.
No, we didn't. They did not have that when they showed us the car. No Moto Compactos there, just the Prologue.
Oh, they should at least let you pick it up and be like, oh,
you know, yeah. Just so you could see it. Yeah. So you could play with Touch it for it. A hot minute. Yeah, there it is.
Jump on it right away.
Whee!
So the Prologue is coming out. This will be the first of Honda's volume EVs. But not the last, they say. It's coming out early in 2024. They're targeting about 45,000 units in 2024. And by 25, ramping up to about 70,000 units a year. Oh. So pretty significant volumes. And then the price, they're not giving detailed pricing yet. They're saying upper 40s for the starting price. So probably somewhere around $48,000-$49,000 starting price. But since this is being built by GM in North America with North American made batteries, it will be eligible for the $7,500 tax credit. So yeah, you should be able to get one
40-ish.
Probably then, 42, 43, probably.
Yeah.
And then whatever random additional incentive you might have in your area.
Yep.
Right. That's actually pretty cool. I think people will like it. Yeah. I think it'll do well. I'm curious to see when it'll happen, just because, like you said, the GM plant and yada yada, sure. that could throw a little bit of a mess wrench into the works.
Oh, and one of the other things, you know, where they've sort of mixed and matched components from from the various GM EVs, even though this is on the same overall platform as the ZDX, you know, same wheelbase. It actually only supports 150 kilowatt charging as opposed to 190 on the ZDX. And that 150 kilowatt charger is the one they use in the Equinox. So they're taking parts from different vehicles to make this thing. And then the interior and the body is all pure Honda. So it's got 11-inch center touchscreen, 11-inch cluster display. And it's got the same basic infotainment system that's in the Accord that I just drove. And cool. they also have the Honda Link app. So they're, for some reason, you know, that's not entirely clear, they're not supporting plug and charge at launch right now, but they have the Honda Link app, which you can link that to your accounts for EVgo and Electrify America. So when you go to an EVgo or Electrify America station, you can initiate the charge with your Honda Link app and pay for it through whatever payment method you have in there. So you only have to use one app, but it's still not quite as convenient as some other vehicles.
Yeah. Getting better.
Yeah.
Getting better. Well, I mean, I went out last October when I went and talked to the CEO and the head of Honda's global electrification, they had done sort of essentially an about face from earlier, sort of like what Honda was wanting to do with EVs. And they were just like, no, we're going all in on EVs. And they showed us all these, some of them we couldn't talk about, and some of them, you know, a lot of them we could. And they showed, you know, their solid state, how they're working on that. So they're going for it.
Yeah. And they, you know, they've got their new electric platform that's coming out in 2026. And you know, they've also got the stuff they're doing with Sony for Afila. So they're going to have a bunch of different EVs, over the next several years.
I like that they're saying it's just called E architecture.
Yeah.
It's just, that's what it is.
No fancy like E.
which is very much their thing.
No nonsense.
They're all-wheel drive. They're like all-wheel drive.
I appreciate that. Don't come up with fancy
names. Super handling all-wheel drive. What's it? Super handling. How's it handle? It's super.
Super. Super. Super duper.
And there's no trail sport version of this one, so this is not going to be an off-roader. Right. Yeah.
Could be. You never know.
It'll be a midnight version.
Yeah. Midnight version, yeah. Late release, halfway through.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. All right. Next up, this week I was in Austin for a couple of days at the Move America conference, which is a big mobility conference. Ran into an interesting company there called Carvaloo. Have you guys ever heard of Carvaloo?
Carvaloo. No, I have not, actually.
I've heard of Caribou.
Well,
but not Carvaloo.
You've both rented cars before, right?
Correct.
Yeah. That's what I did this weekend.
Or there you go. So, you know, have you ever had an issue where you bring back the car that you rented and there's a little ding in the door or a scratch somewhere or anything like that, and you're trying to say, I didn't do this, trying to explain to the people at the rental agency that, you know, this was there, or, you know, this happened while the car was parked and things like that?
Yes.
And how successful has that effort been in terms
moderately
of avoiding? Okay.
Well, I'm a very careful driver, and then I walk around with the car.
I'm a very careful driver, yeah.
Well, Carvaloo has an interesting solution, you know, and this applies. They're targeting this at fleets, at rental fleets, at commercial fleets, and eventually longer term at consumers as well. And what they've done is they have developed some software that uses the sensors that are on the vehicle. So all modern vehicles have a bunch of inertial sensors. There's three-way accelerometers and assorted other sensors that are on the vehicle. And what they're doing is using their algorithms to continuously monitor those sensors. And they've applied some machine learning, imagine that, to recognize certain characteristics. So when you see something happen on the accelerometer signal, you know, you see something bump, it looks at that, looks at those signals, also looks at things like your vehicle speed, your transmission position, and assorted other signals. You know, is there somebody in this car? You know, is the engine running, or are the doors locked and there's nobody in the car? And combines all these things together to figure out when an incident has happened, to provide real time feedback, real time alerts. So, you know, if it's a commercial fleet, you know, and the driver gets into an accident or somebody runs into the vehicle, you know, it can automatically detect this. It sends a signal back to the fleet manager, or, you know, if it's a rental car, it can send a signal back to the rental agency and say, hey, you know, this car was just hit by somebody, or, you know, perhaps it hit a big pothole and might have a problem with a tire or suspension. And it can automatically alert the rental agency, and, you know, it can provide information like, was the car in motion? Was it parked? Where was it? So you get all of this stuff. And, you know, so this can help for customers. You know, if you're a renter, it can help, you know, if you were not at fault, you can prove it with this data. or you know, when the cars come in, you know, the rental agencies are trying to turn these cars around as fast as they can and rent them back out again. And if they have to go over every vehicle in with a fine tooth comb looking for problems, that's, you know, that can be an issue. That takes time and costs money. Or if they can just focus on the ones that they already know probably, you know, have a problem somewhere, then they can do those and they don't have to spend as much time with the other ones. So, it seems like a really good solution. One of the demo videos they were showing me showed a car. In Europe, this is a German company. One of their big customers is a Spanish car sharing firm. You know, kind of like a Zipcar type of thing. And they had video of the drivers of this car turned down this narrow alleyway and then drove down what was actually turned out to be some stairs. This was late at night, drove down some steps, and there was no external damage visible, but they detected what had happened and sent the information to the fleet operator. And when the car came into the shop, they put it up on the hoist and looked, and the bottom of the car was all scraped up. The cover underneath the engine bay was all torn up, and you know, there was assorted other damage. And
yeah, hasn't driven a rental car downstairs? Come on.
I mean,
that's the first thing I do as I'm leaving the rental agency. I find some stairs and I write it down. I'm like, okay, this car is going to be good.
I'm sure, you know, as you're first going into the rental agency, you're scoping around for some stairs to drive down.
To find the nearest stairs.
Yeah, I'm already looking for stairs. I'm asking skateboarders. Exactly. I'm like, hey, where do you guys do grinds? How long are the stairs? Are they wide enough for this vehicle?
Barely.
Yeah.
If I do sideways, if I ride like a rail, like the skateboard, you don't need the full width of the car.
Yeah.
So that's Carvaloo, possibly coming to a car that you buy or rent sometime in the next few years.
I mean, it's kind of a cool idea if it works. Well, I always get nervous with those automatic things. Like, does it really know? Like, you think about all the automatic stuff where it figures things out and you're like, that's not what I wanted to do. That's not really, you know, I'm not really about to hit that curb. I'm not really about to bump into that thing and the car panics. I don't want it thinking, you've hit a curb. I'm like, no, I'm 5 feet away from the curb, but thank you.
Yeah.
The thing in misuse events, I'm looking at their site, and one of the things is misuse, detect damages and misuse events. Now, when I picked up the van, they were the rules. No smoking, no pets, no towing, and no off-roading. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm not going to tow. I'm like, how would I tow anything? There's no tow hook on it. And how am I?
Well, you could have taken it to a U-Haul store and had them install a hitch on it.
Had it, and then taken it off before they came by. But then the off-roading thing, I'm like, well, what do you determine is off-roading? Because we went to one beach.
Is it bumpy enough?
And it ended up being sort of like almost a gravel road, like on one part of it at the very end. Like when you go to the beach in California, you know, that's not all of them have parking lots. Some of them have parking lots, but they're just dirt roads. Mm-hmm. I'm like, is that off-roading? I'm technically on the road, but it's also dirt. And
it's an unpaved road.
Right. Like there are plenty of like unpaved roads that can get quite rutted, especially like even here, if it's like rainy in the spring or whatever, that I can see that if it was sensing like, oh, you're off-road.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, no, you're off-roading.
I'm just on Spring Street, and it's not paved, and it's bumpy because it rained, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's my concern.
I feel like there could be some challenges here. Robbie and I are ready for them, though. We're like, wait, we have answers to all of your AI.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can never entirely trust an AI system anyway.
That's true.
Yeah, you have to – you need some verification and validation of
trust, AI
systems.
Trust but verify.
I'm not sure I'd even go so far as trust, but at least verify.
Verify, verify, verify. Is that more where we are?
Yeah. 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 Trust is a tough one. Yeah.
All right. Trust, kind of trust.
Okay. This weekend at Laguna Seca in California, south of where you are, Robbie, is the 7th RenSport Reunion, which is a big kind of festival that Porsche hosts every few years to honor their history in motorsport. And this year for the RenSport Reunion, they introduced, shockingly, yet another new variant of the 911.
What?
You know, no. they only do that, what, once every 30 years or so, a new variant of the 911?
No.
Unheard of.
Because of the Cayenne Macan, Porsche can build a 911 variant for every 911 owner. Everyone gets their own, very own variant.
Their very own. This is Robbie's. This is Nicole's. This is the Porsche. Sam's. Yeah.
The GT3 R-O-B-B-I-E.
Yeah, exactly. GT3 R-W-A-K-E would be mine.
Well, this one is the 911 GT3 Rennsport. 911 GT3 R Rennsport. And this is a track-only variant, sort of kind of loosely based on the 911 GT3R race car, but this, you know, this goes beyond what the regular GT3R does, because it's not built for any specific rule set for any class of racing, so you can't actually go and race this anywhere. It's just, you know, if you have a absurd amount of money and you want to rent a track for a day and you want to just go out and play, you can have something that is technically faster than, in most respects, than their current generation 911 race cars, you know, possibly even rarer, because they're only building 77 of these.
Why 77? What am I missing about the significance of 77?
I'm not sure. They don't really say.
I feel like sometimes when they pick these weird numbers, they're like, you know, because in 1977, Bob Smith completed the XYZ and, you know, blah, 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 blah. So in honor of him, and you're like, go, Bob. Like, there's all these obscure reasons why they picked
They just looked around the factory, and they're like, how many of these do we have? 77? All right, okay. We're putting it in that special
car. It needs
car.
To be better than that, Robbie. That's not an acceptable reason. I mean,
this year is the 75th anniversary of Porsche.
Then there should be 75. Who dropped the ball at Porsche?
Its design is reminiscent of that of the legendary Brumos Porsche 935-77.
There you go. Yeah,
there you go. They're 1977 935.
There had to be something that was making that relevant.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. He took the overall seventh overall victory. Seven. There's another seven victory at the Porsche for Porsche at the 24 Hours of Daytona in 1978. All right. Well, they showed it in 77, and then he got seventh in 78. But if he had gotten seventh in 77,
well, then you'd have to make 777 of them.
That's a tall order.
Yeah. Yeah, might be tough to sell, you know,
777 of
these at $1 million plus a pop.
Yeah, I guess you got a point.
Yeah.
$1 million a pop. Sure, $777 million.
I was checking my account during that pause. I'm like, hold on.
Did you have enough?
No.
Need a couple more patrons before we get there.
Just like one more, maybe.
Come on, everybody. If y'all pitch in,
we could all get this car.
We can buy Robbie a 911 GT3 R Rennsport.
Right?
Yep.
And change it to the 911 GTR ROBBI.
All right. Let's see. I had, while I was in Austin this week, I decided to take some more rides in Cruise robo taxis, which Nicole and I did in June.
Yes. How'd this go?
Well, I'll start with the good news. It managed to pick me up at the location where I was each time. I did not have to. I did not have to walk more than like 20 feet to get into the car.
Okay, yeah.
So there is that. And it actually, one of the rides, it actually picked me up not far from where we were last time on 2nd Street when we tried to get a ride and then had to walk 6 blocks to get to it. So I did not have to do that this time.
Okay.
The first ride that I summoned on Monday night at just moments after 8 o'clock, right when the service goes live, because it runs from 8 p.m. until 5:30 a.m. I requested a ride, you know, just after 8 o'clock. It took 27 minutes for the car to get there.
Yikes.
But at one point, I was standing in front of the hotel, and I'm looking on the map. I'm watching on the map where the car is going.
Oh, no.
And it's coming down the street where I'm standing. Uh-huh. It was literally one block away from me. I could see it. I took a picture of it and posted it on Blue Sky.
Here it comes.
It was one block away from me. And I knew from watching the route on the map that it was not going to come directly to me. It, in fact, when it got one block away from me, it did a right-hand turn, went over a block, then went down about 5 blocks, looped back around. So it took like another 6 or 7 minutes before it got to me from the time that I actually saw it.
So was it on the same side as the hotel?
Was it trying to get onto your side of the street?
No.
Oh, so it was already at the hotel's on the right hand side.
Okay, that's
the car,
all
if
I
the
know.
Car we just kept going, it would have taken a right into the hotel parking lot.
Yes. It would have gone straight up to the loop in front of the front door of the hotel.
Womp womp.
Womp womp.
Robots, man.
What?
Robots. Every time people are like, well, you know, they're so much better than people, I'm like,
are they really? And I've been seeing videos where they've had like giant traffic jams of those in Austin.
Well, at one point on one of the rides, in fact, it was on my return ride from the University of Texas campus back to the hotel. We're going along one street, and there was a cruise robo-taxi stalled in the middle lane of the road.
Oh, no.
It was sitting there with its four-way flashers on.
Inside?
No, there was no one inside.
Well, that's good at least.
But it was just sitting there, stopped in the middle of the road. I have no idea what the problem was, but there it was. I had it take me up to the U of T campus, and it took a relatively roundabout route, not quite as roundabout as the route that we took in June.
Oh my God.
It was quite a roundabout route. The route coming back was more peculiar. Before I got in the car, I pulled up Google Maps and said, okay, you know, from my location here, you know, what's the best route, you know, driving route to get to the Austin Hilton? And it said 7 minutes, and it was a very direct route, basically going down like Trinity Street. You know, almost a straight shot down, 7 minutes. It took 26 minutes
Oof.
In the cruise because we were at one point, we were going down that same street. You know, it's a major one way, southbound road, like four lanes, I think. And this was at about 9 p.m. So relatively little traffic. You would think that the lowest risk scenario would be to just continue down that same road. That same road, right?
Oh God!
Yeah, no. It at one point decided to turn right, go about three blocks east. And then loop around, do a couple, you know, through a neighborhood, come back around, then continue on down. It's like it was just doing completely nonsensical things as far as route.
So it's
goes.
Just looking for a route with the least amount of other vehicles that it has to interact with.
Is that
with.
What is it like? What is it? What can
well,
you,
except
like-
that there were more vehicles that it had to interact with. It had to go probably about twice the distance, twice the miles traveled. It certainly did at least three times as many turns. You know, because every time you make a turn, that's a risky,
that's a
relatively
risk.
Risky maneuver.
At some point, I had to take a left turn because it took a right. So now to follow, to be parallel, yes. I had to take a left turn, which is the riskiest moves essentially you can do in driving,
right?
Is left turn.
I mean, maybe they were just trying to show off what the car can do. I don't know. You know, or give you your $5 worth for the ride. You know, it's like, you know, so we're gonna keep you in here for as long as we can. You know, so you feel like you're getting value for your money. I don't know. You know, and then the other thing. I mean, I remember when I was learning how to drive many decades ago. You know, one of the things that we were always
taught us how old
back
we
in the
are.
Olden times.
One of the things we were always taught was when you make a turn, you want to turn into the nearest lane. So if you're making a right turn, you want to turn into the rightmost lane on the road you're going in. You know, same thing. You want to turn into the nearest lane. And then if you need to make another turn in the opposite direction after that, then change lanes over.
Yes.
Yeah. Each time this car, actually three different cars, each time they made a turn, if there was a following turn going in the opposite direction, it would go all the way across directly into the, like if it was turning right, it would go all the way across into the leftmost lane.
Oh, no.
So we cut across lanes during the turn.
Yes, cut across multiple lanes during the turn.
Into your lane and then change lanes.
And even one time when it was turning onto a side street that was a two-way road, you know, that was a relatively narrower road, you know, it was regularly making surprisingly wide turns, which really was kind of the only, aside from the routing, was kind of the only safety issue I saw. Just that the turns seemed to be much wider than they really needed to be. you know, so it's not that I never, it's not that I ever felt particularly unsafe in the car, but just really inconvenienced. This is not, you know, I mean, it, aside from being, aside from a novelty factor, it's really not a very useful service at this point.
Do you think it's just a matter of it getting more refined, or do you think it's really just not, is it like just not ready? Do you know what I mean? Or do you think it's like, oh my gosh, they're not even close. Like it's just refinement or.
Well, there's certainly things, you know, that I, that not that I saw in my time in the car, but there are certainly things, you know, that we've seen, you know, from the reports, especially out of San Francisco, where there's a lot more of these on, you know, at any given time. In Austin, you know, during the service period, there's about 7 or 8 cars on the road in service, which is part of why it takes a while to get one. You know, certainly in San Francisco, we've seen things like, you know, driving into wet cement in a in a construction zone,
right?
You know, or, you know, not stopping and yielding to a fire truck at an intersection. You know, so there are definitely issues that they, you know, that this is not necessarily ready for prime time yet. And, you know, I can understand, you know, that Cruise is under a lot of pressure to start generating some revenue. But, you know, if it's not ready, it's not ready. And it's, you know, it's not, are we shouldn't you, be putting these out there.
Is it still in the test phase, Sam, or can anyone access this now? Like, do I have to sign
up? There's a waiting list. You can sign. I mean, anybody can sign up, and you know they're gradually adding people to the waiting list.
I was
going to
try it for kicks. I'm going to be in Austin this week, and I was like, oh, I should try it, but I can't. I'm like, wait, no, I can't because I'm not on. I don't have it yet.
Well, I can.
I'm still on the list.
I can connect you with somebody at Cruise.
See if I can maybe get you on the list, and I'll give it a shot and see if I can. And I'll
see where you go. Yeah. See what kind of real estate you can check out while you're driving down random sites.
I mean, maybe I'll
find
a new place to buy. One always needs more property. I mean,
you know, on Tuesday night, we were coming back from dinner, and amazingly enough, there were, you know, a couple of the guys I was with, you know, wanted to try this out. So there were 3 of us squeezed into the back seat of a Bolt.
Oh, God.
And if it had taken a very direct route back straight back to the hotel, it would have been about a, I don't know, 3.5-4 minute ride. It took closer to 15 minutes because, you know, again, it did one of these weird routes where it was actually going down a street in the direction of the hotel, made a left turn, then did 2 rides, went back in the opposite direction away from the hotel.
Heck?
And strangely enough, it seemed like every time it was heading back to the hotel, it always picked a route that ran past in front of the state capitol. So maybe it just wanted to show everybody the state capitol.
Are you saying this is a politically motivated detour?
It might be. I don't know. I have no evidence to prove that. You know, if you happen to be in Austin or San Francisco or Phoenix, you know, if you're interested in the novelty factor, go ahead and try it out. But, you know, as a, you know, if what you want is just the most convenient way to get around town, it's not that yet.
It would be nice if it was, but yeah.
I mean, I have family that can't drive. They're not allowed to drive.
Right.
Because for health reasons. Not because they're bad drivers. they're maniacs
too many
behind
tickets.
The wheel. So, you know, I like the idea of having these systems, but also I would like them to work.
Yeah.
What happened to your cousin?
Mom,
I don't know.
She
got on a cruise
either.
And we never heard from her again.
Yeah.
But like my mom,
she's still riding around
either.
Somewhere.
It would be really nice to have these be reliable. But the thing is, like, you think about it, if it was, say you're putting someone who's a senior, right, who they can't drive anymore, and you're like, well, I can hail this self-driving vehicle for you probably increase their stress level to the point that now they're having a panic attack in the back because
where's
it's doing
the car?
Such
like, yeah, where is this thing
things,
taking me?
Right?
Where are we
like,
going?
Oh my gosh! And how do I stop it? And what's happening? And oh my
and being
gosh!
Kidnapped.
You know,
yeah, Terminator exactly. Was correct.
It's exactly. You were John Connor, isn't that the guy? And now it's kidnapping
dun,
you.
Dun,
yeah.
Dun,
yeah.
Dun.
You know, and to be fair, you know, you can, you know, if you're feeling uncomfortable, you can always hit the button on the headliner to stop, you know, or to call for assistance and, you know, get an explanation of what's happening. I didn't do that this time. But, you know, and Cruise is developing the Origin. They actually did show a video. They released a video this week, or maybe it was last week, of the prototype Origin with that's equipped for wheelchairs. They showed that to us.
So cool.
Yeah, they showed it to us last year when I was in San Francisco. And so that one, it has a ramp. So the Origin is their purpose-built robo-taxi. So unlike the Bolt, you know, it has carriage-style seating for six. And, you know, so everybody's facing the center. The middle part of the vehicle is wide open. And it's got sliding doors. And the version with the wheelchair, they take a couple of the seats out. And there's a ramp that emerges out from the floor, emerges out sideways, and then drops down. And you can go up, and they have a clamping system, an automatic clamping system that you roll your chair up into the thing, back into that section where they've taken the seats out, and then it reaches out and clamps the wheels so the chairs are restrained in place for safety. And you know that, but the problem is they haven't gotten approval to deploy those things yet. You know, that is actually a really valid use case.
That would be
amazing. for people that can't, that are unable to drive, you know, but mm-hmm. want to have that mobility. And you know, as I said, they have gotten better in terms of pickup and drop off points. That's much better than it was in June. So they're making progress, but it's slow progress. And
which is, I mean, my whole thing is that they should just be happy with slow progress. I mean, progress is progress, but when you're pushing it because you're concerned about, you know, stockholder, then I'm just like, come on, just slow down.
I think pushing it like is great, and I'm all for that, and like, you know, progress and baby steps, and like you said. But I think where the problem comes in is when it just gets to be a little bit like, it's so inconvenient. I think you create more problems than you solve. It's like, look at this cool technology that we have, and yeah, you can actually use it now. Check it out. And like, this is horrible. Now I don't want to use the technology. We made these changes here. It was so bad, whatever. Like, you know what I mean? It sort of makes people, it creates a sense of distrust. I'm like, I tried that once. And people aren't always willing to give things a second chance. Mm-hmm. It takes some convincing, you know?
Yeah. And part of that convincing is, you know, making sure that the vehicles aren't doing things that are annoying the general public or annoying first responders like police and firefighters and
that's
ambulances.
Huge. Yeah. Yeah,
that's a big issue in San Francisco, you know, where they've
huge.
Got a bunch of these vehicles.
Yeah.
So yeah, they've got to get those issues sorted out with how they interact with first responders, especially. And also just trying not to get, you know, 10, 12, 15 vehicles stuck on the same block. That's
I keep
never
seeing,
a good thing.
And you know, it feels like I see a lot of those videos. I mean, I'm sure those are the ones people aren't recording, just the boring ride, right? Mm-hmm. But still, I'm like, okay, I get there's a lot of boring rides, but there's a lot of rides where everything seems to have gone sideways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and to be fair, that doesn't happen very often with people on board. It's usually when they're doing various kinds of testing. Yeah.
Right.
And, you know, there's only been two accidents with injuries where.
So, they're, you know. So safety wise, in terms of actual. They're actually pretty safe. Yeah.
So, I mean, I've never felt unsafe riding in one of these things, but I have felt inconvenienced.
That's kind of how we were riding. That's a great way to describe it. It's like, this is a really cool experience, but this is not how I want to do this every day. You know,
if I need to get somewhere, you know, quickly and safely, that, you know, granted, I generally feel safer in these things than I do in a New York taxi. So,
true.
You know, there is that.
True. Yes.
The bar is low, though.
it is a very low bar.
I was like, there's
in fact,
a lot
I think,
of
I think
things
that bar
that
might actually be buried under the ground. But
yeah. Right. Exactly. If that's your bar, then forget it.
All right. Earlier this week, Cox Automotive, who do, you know, they have a whole bunch of different businesses. They do a lot of work with dealers and they collect a lot of data. They had their third quarter call. You know, their third quarter update call with some of their folks, their industry insights and their sales forecast for Q3. And they had some interesting things. And I sent you guys the email with the PDF of the presentation document. But some of the interesting details that came out of this is that the drop in EV prices since the beginning of this year, actually. So they kind of peaked throughout the second half of 2022 at average transaction prices in the looks like about $68,000, $69,000 range. And they've dropped pretty significantly down to for EVs. They're down in July. They were down to $53,376. And Tesla prices in the same period were down to just shy of $55,000. So EV prices have come down a lot in the last 12 months. And that's a good thing. I mean, we need more affordable EVs, and hopefully they will continue to decline in price. Let's see what else. Oh, the market share for EVs, brands selling EVs. Cox is predicting that the EV share, Tesla's EV share has dropped by 8 points this year, down to about 60% of the EV market. Chevrolet's up by 1 point. Ford has declined by a couple of points. I think
Weird. Is that supply stuff?
I think it's supply because they lost some production of the Lightning earlier in the year. They were shut down for a few weeks when they had a battery fire that they were investigating. When they were transitioning over to the new assembly line, and then same with Mach-E, they lost some production there as they were expanding the capacity at that plant. So we'll see where that goes in 2024. Hyundai was up, Rivian was up, BMW was up pretty significantly by 3 percentage points. VW, Mercedes, Kia, VW and Mercedes were both up by 2 points. Kia was down. Audi and Nissan was about flat. So over the next 12 months, you know, with all the new models coming out and supplies increasing, we should start to see those market share numbers shift even more, I think.
Yeah.
And then inventories. There's a lot more inventory of EVs now than there was a year ago. A year ago, it was down in September 2022. It was about, looks like about 30 days supply of EVs. Yeah. It's now at 97 days.
That's huge. What a difference.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
So
it's a very steep, like, whoop, as you look at the graph.
Yeah. If you're looking for an EV, now's probably not a bad time to go shopping for one. You can probably get some decent, you probably have some negotiating power now that you didn't have a year ago.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
That's
totally
a huge amount of, yeah. More inventory of EVs than they do of gas vehicles. Is that
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Gas vehicle inventories are about 57 days, which is about, that's been the traditional industry average is what they keep,
is
about 2 months supply.
So EVs are just way high.
Yeah. Overall inventories have been continuing to climb. So the supply chain problems are getting alleviated. Although if you're looking for a Ford, GM or Stellantis vehicle, some of the more popular ones might be in short supply for the next little while. So that's Cox for Q3. The prices are continuing to stabilize. You're not getting the kinds of huge markups that there was a year ago. So now's a much better time to buy a car than it was a year ago. Speaking of buying a car, that's all the topics we had. But and we didn't get any emails this week, but there was an interesting conversation in the Discord over the last couple of days that I wanted to bring up. This was initiated by Todd. He says he's in Northern California and been casually browsing used EVs in the $6,000 to $15,000 range for a possible fun extra car. In that price range, I've seen the VW e-Golf, BMW i3, and Fiat 500e. I'm wondering if the Wheel Bearings team or anyone else here has an opinion about which one would be the most fun to drive for local errands. Also, I'm wondering if there are any other fun, cheap, used EVs that I might be overlooking. I understand that some of these might be getting up there in age, which means in some cases they might be near the end of their battery warranty, but I'm not really concerned about that, especially at the lower end of the price range. At this point, I'm only casually looking, but if and when I get serious about this, I'd go test drive them to make sure I'd fit. I'm 6'6". Yeah, you definitely want to test drive them.
Absolutely.
And in the meantime, it'd be great to get people's opinions of cheap used EVs. And Robbie, I know you've got to leave in a few minutes, but why don't you go first? What are your thoughts on this one?
I love the e-Golf.
Yeah.
E-Golf is dope. E-Golf is cool.
E-Golf is dope.
It's a good little car. I like the I think the Fiat 500e is the best Fiat.
Absolutely.
I had a Fiat 500. We had one on lease, and then someone dropped off a Fiat 500e, and I was like, man, this is so much better. The only issue why we didn't get the 500e when we were doing is that my wife's work was not her work, her school. Was it was exactly the amount of range that the Fiat 500e got.
Oh, jeez.
Going to and from school every day, and this is about 7 years ago, and I was like,
she didn't want to press her luck every single day of the week.
No, we're not. We're going.
Unless she's got somewhere to charge it at school.
Yeah, the school didn't have anywhere to charge it, and I was okay. Never mind.
He's to the edge. No, thank you.
Mm-mm. Yeah. So, but I think they're talking about the Spark. I've never driven the Spark, so I don't have any. Input on that, but of the two, I like the 500e, I like the e-Golf more. You're gonna have a lot more room. It's essentially
it's a Golf.
Like it's a Golf. It's a little GTI that's electric. But yeah, those do are a bit pricier than everything else, so you kind of get what you pay for, I guess. That's my 2 cents.
Okay.
And I've never driven the Spark either.
Neither have I.
I feel
they're
like
pretty rare.
Yeah, so I have no opinion on the Spark, but I kind of like the Fiat. I know the e-Golf is really super fun and cool, but I don't know why. I like the little 500e. I like that one, and it's new. Isn't it new this year again? Was he just looking for used vehicles?
He's looking for a used one.
He was just looking
there's
for
a,
used.
The second generation one is coming early next year.
So theoretically, the second gen is about to come. Maybe the people that have the old, like the old one, maybe not so hot a deal anymore because you got the new one. So. You know, people don't want the old one. Maybe I'll get a better price.
Yeah, maybe. I agree on the e-Golf. The Spark, they didn't build, I think they only built, I don't know, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 of those. And there were actually two different versions of it because the first model year, it had a battery from A123 Systems. And then they switched over to an LG Chem battery. So they were using basically the same battery modules that went into the Volt. And when they did that, it lost some torque because the original one with the A123 battery had 400 foot-pounds of torque in a Spark, which was
that thing must have flown. Bonkers. Oh yeah. My gosh!
It didn't have a lot of range, but it had a lot of torque.
But the range it did have, it got there quickly.
Yes, yeah, you could use up that range very rapidly, The e-Golf was always one of my favorites. And then somebody else in here mentioned the Kona EV. Those are still a little bit higher in price. According to Jeff D, those are going for about $25,000. Maybe once the new Kona EVs are hitting the market in the next couple of months, you might see the prices on the first generation ones dropping. If you can get one of those, 259 miles of range, those would be amazing. Yeah, if you can get one of those for like $20,000, that would be awesome.
That wasn't on his list. You're adding cars that weren't on his list. Did he want cars that weren't on his list?
One of the respondents in the Discord mentioned that one.
Okay, that's fair to add into the list then. Yeah. I know. I would agree. I think that would be a great idea.
To be fair, he did ask us originally. He said for the wheel bearings crew. We're putting suggestions in there.
I like the Kona. I like the idea of it. I think that's a good one. Thumbs up to that idea.
And I don't know what prices are like on the Mini E, the electric minis.
The SE?
Yeah.
The new one? Yeah, you can get them on lease now. So for years, they wouldn't allow it on lease. But now that it's coming to end of life, this version, you can get them on lease. It's like $380-something.
Oh.
So it's not cheap. It's about the prices of like leasing a Kona right now. Or actually even an Ioniq 5 in certain areas.
So, there's some good choices there. If you can get by with an EV with, under 100 miles of range, all of these have, battery warranties that run 8 years, 100,000 miles. at least. So, you know, if you're getting like a, you know, a 4 or 5 year old e-Golf, you know, you're still going to have, you know, several more years of warranty on the battery. And most of these, you know, they don't use the battery particularly aggressively. So it's more than likely, you know, aside from the Nissan Leaf, you know, which had an air cooled battery, most of the rest of these are all liquid cooled batteries. And so the batteries should actually hold up pretty well over time. And none of these support, you know, really high power charging. So that's not going to do much to degrade your battery anyway. These are all like 50 kilowatts or less, if they even have DC fast charging. All right. Anything else?
I don't have anything else. That's it for me.
All right. Well, let's call it a show then. And we will talk to you all next week. And don't forget to make your Taco-tober donations.
Taco-tober. Oh, yeah.
Or just eat tacos, man.
Just eat tacos. Why not?
Well, that's always a good thing to do any time of year. But
tacos.
Tacos.
All right. Talk to you all later.
Bye.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.